This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
It's 54 degrees in Central Virginia at 19 minutes after the hour of 5 p.m. on this, the first day of December, 2009. Just 1 month away from 2010. I cannot believe it. Goodness gracious. This is Charlottesville Right Now, News Radio 1070 WINA. Brian Wheeler is the Executive Director of Charlottesville Tomorrow, online at cvilletomorrow.org, and he joins us on Tuesday afternoons to talk a little growth, development, and local politics. How are you? It's good to see you.
I'm doing great, Coy.
Tell me everything.
I had a great Thanksgiving.
I want to know the whole story.
We went down to Morganton, North Carolina.
Morganton, where is that?
It's
Southeast?
It's on I-40. It's in the mountains. Like Table Rock, North Carolina is nearby.
I-40 west of Asheville?
East of Asheville.
East of Asheville.
But sort of between. Okay, the way you get there is you go down I-81, then you turn left on 77.
Yeah, 77 goes through the mountains. I know that road
and then
very well.
Once 77 hits Statesville at I-40,
yeah,
then you're like an hour away.
You go east.
So another hour west on I-40.
But not quite to.
But not all the way to Asheville.
Not all the way to Asheville.
But you're in the mountains.
Allison's family is from Waynesville.
Yeah.
Which is about 45 minutes west of Asheville.
Right.
Boy, that's pretty country. That is absolutely beautiful.
It is.
Nicest people in the world, too.
The mountains in Waynesville are closer and bigger than Morganton. But in Morganton, 360-degree view of mountains.
Yeah. So and what's it like, your country mountain Thanksgiving?
It was all about pie, I'm happy to say.
I'm speechless.
You know, it's funny. I was telling them about our little program, Coy.
A little pie show we do on Tuesdays.
And they were like, well, Brian, when did you get into this cooking and food program on the radio? And I was like, well, actually, pie is just one small chapter of what we talk about.
Not really
about
a cooking show. The host is just usually hungry at this time of the day.
But I realized that, you know, maybe you have some new listeners and they don't know why we talk about pie.
How did we get on pie?
Let me just say,
pie is
all about our sense of place. You know, what are those culinary treats that make this hometown special? And in my book, you know, it's what stores you can go into and buy the right pie.
Yeah.
So anyway, we've been trying to document this over the past couple of years, you and I, on this little program. And, you know, we also have our rural countryside in Alamar County where we produce apples and peaches, great pie ingredients. Anyway, so I'm telling my family about this, and they didn't know my history with pie here. And I was so excited because a new member of the family was joining us for her first Thanksgiving.
Uh-huh.
She married one of my cousins, Sarah. Sarah came from Indiana.
Did she come bearing pie?
She came bearing pie recipes.
Ooh.
That she finagled out of her mother like 2 years ago.
Interesting.
So she's grown up. She's out of college. And she finally made the phone call, she said 2 years ago to Mom. Mom, you know, I'm an adult now. You need to tell me how to make the pies. And there are three pies she had to learn. Pumpkin, apple, and pecan pie.
And these are all Indiana old family recipes.
Right. And
passed down from the Amish.
So I said, Sarah, you know, did she have to pull out the book? Did she just, you know, off the top of her head? And Sarah said, oh, no, just off the top of her head. She told me all the ingredients and how to do it.
Wow.
And then Sarah paused and she said, but she left out one key ingredient, the crust.
Well, we know that can make or break a pie.
And we do know that. And she said to her mom, you know, Mom, you didn't tell me about the crust. And she's like, oh, well, you know, I always did that after you went to bed.
Didn't want you to see it.
So you know what the crust secret was?
What?
Pillsbury.
She just bought a store-bought crust.
She bought Pillsbury, but, you know, threw the flour all over the place,
yeah,
you know, in the middle of the night to make it appear.
there was
a homemade crust.
Homemade crust.
So with the aid of Pillsbury on the crust side,
I never knew you could taste the difference until we judged that the big pie competition at the Mud House in Charlottesville
You know, sort of like wine, Coy. If you taste, you know, five or six wines right in a row, you can really taste the difference,
yeah,
right? Well, of course, we had like 20 pieces of pie.
I know. My stomach still remembers that.
But anyway.
But I could taste the difference after a while. I could tell, hey, this is not homemade crust.
So my introduction to Sarah was her baking these pies the first night we get to Morganton. They smell great. It's Thanksgiving.
Were they good?
They were excellent.
What'd you
start
with?
I had to wait till the next day.
Yeah.
What did I start with?
Did you eat a lot of...
I just put the pie sampler plate together immediately.
Oh, did you eat a lot of
turkey? She made homemade whipped cream. Oh, yeah. Well, we did all that. The turkey, the stuffing. That was all
great,
too.
What was your pre-pie pause, the triple P, which is the space between the turkey and the pie. It's the pre-pie pause.
It was not very long. I had to get right in there.
What did you do? I mean, some people wait hours.
Oh, no.
Other people don't wait at all. Their pre-pie pause is the time it takes to walk back to the kitchen.
Yeah, I was more in that neck of the woods.
I was about 20, 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Because I'm full, but I want some pie.
The pies were a little hot still, so I let them cool. I didn't want them burning my...
Yeah, you can't have that. Yeah, that so on your plate is what? Apple, pumpkin?
A slice of each.
Of apple and pumpkin. That's what I had.
Apple, pumpkin, and pecan.
And pecan.
Topped with homemade whipped cream.
Homemade whipped cream?
So it was a pie sampler.
Man.
Extravaganza.
This woman's magic.
She was magic. And... And the apple pie, I tell you, is one of the best I've ever had.
Really? And the apples were from?
I don't know where they were from, but they were sliced really thin. It wasn't the big sort of chunks.
Yeah.
It was more like, you know when you put those apples through the wheel, you turn, you spike the end of the apple.
Yeah.
It's the peeler, the apple peeler.
Yeah.
And then you turn the wheel and the apple gets peeled, right?
Right.
But some of those peelers also slice them as they go, that sort of ring slice. So it's like a slinky at the end.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, you have a apple like a slinky.
Real thin, almost wafer-like.
Exactly. And
ooh,
I was
I
kind
like
of skeptical
that.
At first, but it
works.
Was amazing.
Really?
Yeah.
I like that.
So
that the apple, you don't really have to chew it. It sort of just sits on your tongue and almost melts in your mouth.
And it meant that the apple absorbed all the flavors that were in there. And there were some secret ingredients that I didn't learn about.
That makes sense, because if the apple's thin, the flavor and all the sugar and stuff is going to get through it instead of versus a chunky apple. See, now it's
based
turning
on
into
my
a
scientific
cooking show.
Experience with this. So speaking of pie, Coy,
did you go back for seconds for pie?
I couldn't at that point. And I had a pie hangover till like 4 in the morning. We were staying in this hotel. And so I was already uncomfortable in the bed.
Yeah,
but then
because
of the
bed.
Expanse of my stomach at that point, it was really bad till like 4 in the morning.
Oh, ouch. That you had that.
I overdid it.
That you did.
I did.
You're a good American. We celebrate gluttony one day a year.
Well, I'm going to overdo it again Friday night, I can tell you right now. Because Friday night, there's a pie contest that you and I are judging with Jay Thomas, the new principal at Albemarle High School. This is a contest open to the public, so you can drop off your pies at Albemarle at, I believe, 5 o'clock is when you have to drop the pies off. And then the dessert hour is 6:30 to 7:30 when we'll be judging and eating the pies. And you don't have to enter a pie. You can just come eat pies. And this is all right before the students at Albemarle High School do a production of Othello. And so pie, Shakespeare, students.
So this is what we want people to do this coming Friday night.
This Friday
night. To join us at Albemarle High School with its new beautiful front addition. Is that done?
Oh, I found the drop-off time. Drop-off pies at Albemarle. Okay, at 5. Contest starts at 6:15. After Coy arrives, it says.
Is that what I said? Well, I told him. I said, I got to do this show until 6, and Friday I'm going to be coming from Fashion Square Mall because we're going to be doing up the toy lift on Friday.
All proceeds go to the Albemarle High School Drama Department. It's a $5 donation to enter your pie. And yeah, after that, you can eat pie, but hopefully you'll stay and watch the production of Othello, which starts at 8 o'clock.
So we're going to start 6:15. You can drop off up until then. Brian and Coy and Principal
Thomas
come
principal.
In. And we're going to eat pie and give, is there a winner per categories or just one?
There is, yep.
Best to show.
They will be awarded for best pie in 4 categories, Coy. Berry, fruit and veggie, nut. Oh, wait. Berry, fruit and veggie, nut, cream, and best in show.
Okay.
So 4 categories plus best in
What's
show.
Fruit and veggie? We didn't have that category before.
No.
A veggie pie.
Yeah, well, this will be interesting.
Huh.
So I hope people will participate in our Pie Fest at Albemarle High School.
Join us on Friday at Albemarle High School. The pie eating competition that gets underway at 6:15. The judges will start to eat right when I get there.
And we do have some growth and development to talk about after the break, I guess.
Let's do that. We'll take a break for local news and weather. And when we get back, what are we talking about?
We're going to talk about the future of Route 250. I previewed that a little bit in a previous show, but now we're going to go in depth talking about that. Jarman's Gap Road out in Crozet, and of course, water.
All that coming up. Stay with us. We're talking with Brian Wheeler about growth and development here in Central Virginia, and y'all been working on a series in the Daily Progress about the future of Route 250 West, right?
We have, East and West.
The so whole future?
Oh, from Glenmore to Yancey Mills out in Crozet.
Interesting.
The entire, you know, urbanized stretch.
I didn't see all of them, but I did read the part that's that we were talking about, and it's that stretch from like town, from like the bypass, like Bel Air Market, out to like Broomley Road, the right. Ivy Nursery.
Yep.
And that's just going to look like 29 North.
And that section was in today's paper and on our website as well at seavilletomorrow.org. Sean Tubbs wrote that story about the future of 250 from Emmett Street, right near the university, out to Broomley Road, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
And Roshana Dixit at the Daily Progress wrote about the two stretches, one from Glenmore to I-64, and then the section of Pantops, I-64, on into the city over Free Bridge and to the 250 interchange with the future Meadow Creek Parkway. So, and then tomorrow's paper and our website will have the fourth part of the series, and I'll be writing about the section from Broomley Road through Ivy out to Crozet and Yancey Mills.
Well, hopefully that's the one part of the 250 that won't see many changes.
Well, that's what's interesting, Coy. I went back and read all four articles today to sort of pull together some themes to get you and the listeners thinking about. What we noticed after interviewing people throughout this whole stretch of road is that people are their frustration with traffic is growing everywhere along the road. So, and that for some people, it means, you know, they can no longer bike or walk safely along 250. For others, it means they're waiting longer to get into town, to get to their job, to get to school. For others, it means they're taking other routes than they used to take. They're not taking 250 anymore. And so, but at the same time, most people said it's all about the rush hour. That's when the problem is.
Yeah.
The rest of the time, you know, it's fine. We love 250.
I agree with that.
Now, when you think about the future of Route 250, they're on two very different paths. The eastern part of 250 from Charlottesville out towards Fluvanna, out to Glenmore. The solution for that is a whole lot of road improvements. I think Roshana's article talked about $16 million needed to improve the stretch from Glenmore to I-64. And then in the order of $20 to $40 million, I think, for the Pantop section. So Eastern
wow.
Eastern 250 is all about improvements. Of course, what don't we have? We don't have money to fund.
For those improvements.
For
yeah.
those improvements. So some of the people that were interviewed said, you know what, if you put a growth area here as an island, Glenmore and the village of Vervana, out on 250, the only way for us to get anywhere is on 250. You need to fund the infrastructure. We've heard that over and over in the course of our programs. And now the people who live in that growth area are saying well, they don't want more growth if there's not going to be infrastructure to keep up with it.
Yeah. And that really is the question. But that's the question that's not often asked by the folks who are making the decision about the growth. You know, the folks who have the final say, for example, the County Board of Supervisors, do they stop and say, wait a minute, can we approve this new neighborhood? Do we have the infrastructure to support it? They oftentimes just go ahead and greenlight it and say, well, the infrastructure will catch up with it at some point.
Yes and no. And in the past, I would agree with you. They didn't ask that question. I think since the county started doing master plans, starting with Crozet, that was approved in 2004. Now the village of Vervana is going to have a master plan. Pantops has one, 29 North. As the county started putting into detail what the improvements would be needed to support growth, then the citizens naturally started asking, okay, when do we get that, right?
Yeah.
And so the question does come up now. And out at Glenmore, what they are saying in the draft master plan that's coming in front of the Board of Supervisors next year is, you know what, there's limits on sewer capacity at Glenmore. There's limits on road capacity on 250. And we only want to approve developments up to a certain point. And if the county puts that into their comprehensive plan, if they write down some of those thresholds and limits, that gives the Board of Supervisors the ability to point to that and say, you know what, Coy, this development you're bringing forward, it's a great one, but we can't do it right now. Even though it's a great idea, we don't have the infrastructure for it.
Yeah.
In the absence of having something in the plan that puts some restriction, then it comes across as arbitrary that the Board of Supervisors is sort of picking favorites, you know?
Yeah.
And that means they will lose in court. So the developer could challenge them.
So you got to put it in the plan and put it in the guidelines.
That's right. And so increasingly, Albemarle County has been doing that.
Right.
Now,
it's going to be interesting to see the new blood on the board with, Dwayne Snow and Rodney Thomas coming in as conservatives and saying, hey, zero budgeting and we got to live within our means. And it's going to be interesting, their approach to growth, without the money for the infrastructure to support the growth. It'll be interesting their take on it.
Right. And developers will be coming in front of them and saying, we can help you with your economic problem. If you allow us to build this development, you will get more tax revenues and we will help you. Other leaders, Dave Norris, for example, the mayor of Charlottesville, David Slutsky, the chair of the Board of Supervisors right now, they both say what the answer is regime change in Richmond. Those are two Democrats who want more Democrats elected in Richmond. And they say there won't be a solution to the transportation funding crisis in Virginia until more people of their party are elected. Now, Dave Norris was quoted in one of these articles, and I thought it was pretty interesting what he said. He said that the county never should have allowed the growth to happen, period, on Pantops, and that the congestion problems at Free Bridge are the result of the county making poor decisions.
Hmm.
Now, that said, I think,
is that the article where somebody said, get over it, the city needs to get over it?
And David Slutsky said that.
Yeah, I read that quote.
Now, I'm not sure David would have said that before the recent election.
Yeah.
But I think in part what he was saying, Coy, was that we need to get over the concern about this and realize that the problem is in Richmond from Mr. Slutsky's point of view.
Yeah.
So he's saying, we have growth out there. That's a designated growth area. We'd rather have the growth there than out in the rural countryside, where it will be more expensive.
And when he says the problem is Richmond, he means that the money is not coming from Richmond. And in his perspective, the money is not coming from the Republican-controlled House to support infrastructure at the local level.
Right. And the deal has always been in Virginia that the state is supposed to pay for roads. And
localities pay for schools.
And less and less are they doing that, actually, for both, but on the roads front as well. But Dave Norris, was saying, they shouldn't have allowed that growth to happen. But at the same time, what he sees is the city being squeezed from all directions. Biscuit Run, when that development was being approved, that's south of I-64 between 20 and Old Lynchburg Road. The city came forward and said, we're concerned about all those people driving into the city.
Yeah.
When development happens on Rio and 29 North, they see the Meadow Creek Parkway coming in to help alleviate congestion. They say, we don't want to give up our park space for a new road. They see Pantops. They say, we don't want another bridge over the Ravanna River. We like Free Bridge the way it is. We don't want to widen that. There are challenges on all compass points. And what was interesting about this series doing the 250 piece was that residents are frustrated along that corridor as well.
Wouldn't Free Bridge just widened?
It was widened.
Back in the 90s, I remember driving through that construction.
It was.
Yeah.
And one of the recommendations in the transportation plan for that area is to have another bridge somewhere. Yeah. Now, that's often been talked about in the context of an eastern connector, another connector road. But again, when it comes to parks in the city, the preferred alternative, the preferred alignment for the so-called eastern connector, which would be a road that would take traffic off of, for example, Rio near the Meadow Creek Parkway, and cut it over towards Pantops without coming into the city, right? That was the idea behind the Eastern Connector. But the path that was preferred was through Penn Park, the Meadow Creek Golf Course.
And it dumps all the traffic down there at that busy intersection.
At 20 and 250.
At the foot of Pantops, which is already, slammed. Oh, goodness. We're talking with Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville Tomorrow, and Jim is in Charlottesville on line one. Jim, thanks for your patience. You go right ahead.
Hi, I have a question for Brian. The figures, I live off of Route 729, and I travel that 250 corridor every day to go to work. And they mentioned about $16 million to do road improvements from Glenmore to 64. The railroad bridge at Shadwell is in appalling condition. There's concrete laying down on the roadbed. There's exposed rebar. It's a very, very old bridge, and it is in desperate need of replacing. I can't imagine them doing road improvements from Glenmore to 64 and replacing that bridge for $16 million.
Remind me where that bridge is.
It's between where the old Shadwell store is and the stoplight at 729 at Stone Robinson.
Okay, right there past Luck Stone.
Right.
Yep. Well, if they widen that part of the road, you are correct. They would have to widen that bridge. I don't know if that specific project is in that number, but you're correct. When they get into bridges like that, it does add a lot of cost. something I'll check into.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you, Jim. Appreciate it. We got a line open at 977-1070. We're talking growth and development with Brian Wheeler, as we are wont to do on Tuesday afternoons.
And as we look at the other part of the corridor towards the west, the university is certainly the big factor. That's in today's paper between Emmett Street and Broomley Road, because they've got developments all along that corridor.
Yeah. Can you say stoplights?
And there are some stoplights there. And
there are going to be more.
Sean Tubbs interviewed George Carter, who runs the Ivy Nursery, and he was reflecting back the many years they've been there. And how, the only light was at Copley Road, way down from them. And so there are a few more lights there. But, one of the things that's different about the proposed path for Route 250 West is there is no widening envisioned. And that's because the county drew a line in the sand back in 2000 and said, we will not allow this road to be widened. Not just around that part of the county, but all the way out to the county's border. Up on Afton Mountain.
Wow. So from Broomley Road, the Ivy Nursery there, which is just past the Volvo, from there all the way to Afton, the county has said, don't touch 250.
That's right.
We want it to stay what it looks like.
VDOT wanted to widen it, and groups like Scenic 250 came together and fought that with a number of citizens. But in the final report in 2000 was to widen Route 250 West to four lanes from Charlottesville to the Meacham's River. That's where that big railroad trestle is that you drive underneath.
Yep.
And the community said, nope, we don't want that. And the reason they said was, this is a scenic corridor. It's a scenic byway. We want to protect the rural countryside and have buffers along this road that, hide the development. One of the things you'll see in the story tomorrow is I interviewed some folks, the developers behind Old Trail, Will Yancey, who's working on the Yancey Mills Business Park project. They both reflected on the ideas they have about growth in their part of the 250 corridor. But both of them said, you know what? We want to hide our development from Route 250 because we respect that corridor and what the community has decided is important about that. Other residents out there, though, are saying, you know what? Even if you hide the development, you're still putting a lot more traffic and congestion.
Who need to use 250?
On the road, who need to use 250.
Yeah. But it also is really only a problem in the rush hour times.
Yep.
I mean, that's really the only time it backs up in the morning when you're coming in on 250, which that's my commute. And it's, there are times when it can be bumper to bumper past Broomley Road.
Right.
That's a long way, but it just takes a few minutes extra. It's not a big deal.
It was interesting, Coy. What I heard from people out on 250 West was, we don't mind the congestion. It's just a rush hour.
Yeah.
We don't want the road widened. Don't do anything to us.
Yeah.
We'll deal with it. On the east, they said, you know what? Stop all construction. We don't want any new homes. Widen the road, and then we'll talk about more growth.
So on the east side, they're okay with widening the road.
That's right. I mean, I'm sure there are people that are opposed to it. But what you hear, the consensus is, as developed in these plans, these transportation plans, and the gentleman called about the $16 million, plans like that envision widening that road.
Brian Wheeler is the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow, online at cbilltomorrow.org. I got a minute left. Do you have a news story you'd like to share with the good folks?
I don't know.
What Jarman's Gap Road?
Oh, Jarman's Gap. Okay.
Yeah.
Good example of infrastructure. That's a road priority the county has had. After the Meadow Creek Parkway, the next two things are Jarman's Gap Road, Georgetown Road. Commonwealth Transportation Board is meeting in Richmond today.
Yeah.
They are expected to cut the Jarman's Gap Road project in half. From right now, it's expected to be like a $14 million project. They're going to take away $7 million from that road. And so there's an infrastructure project in a growth area. It's not going to happen anytime soon.
Nope. The age in which we live. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, Corey.
Always enjoy it. And I'll see you Friday night at Albemarle High School at 6:15 for the big pie off to support the kids at Albemarle High School Department of Drama. Y'all have a great night. Stay tuned for Best Seat in the House. We'll
all have more fun. You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit cvillepodcast.com for more.